From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 31st day of July, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. And we'll discuss today's cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator, located in Lexington. In agricultural news, the House of Representatives has voted down legislation that would have tightened position limits on energy and agricultural futures contracts. And the CFTC is mulling over the problems with convergence. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, the Closing Market Report, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau and take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby contract in the wheat pit traded the September to 783¾, down 4 cents for the day. December contract at 808¾, down 3¾. And the March futures at 831¾, down 4 cents on the afternoon. Kansas City September wheat at 814¾, down 4½ cents. Back in Chicago in the corn pit, September futures traded 14 cents. That's right, 14 cents lower at $5.87½. A December settlement at 607½, down 13¾. And the March futures at 627½, down 13¾ as well. May contract at $6.40, settlement price for 2009, down 13¼ today. August soybean futures were a penny and three quarters higher at $13.95¾. September at $13.94¼, down 1¼. November beans at $14.04, down a penny. January futures 0.75¢ lower at $14.22. And November for 2009 soybeans gained 11½ cents today to settle at $14.05. From the soybean meal pit, August contract at $3.7960, a dollar lower. August bean oil at $58.26, unchanged on the day. Aug live cattle at $98.40, 52½ higher. The August feeder cattle at $113.80, up $1.27½. And the August lean hogs at $79.62½, 75 cents higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. September crude oil futures at $122.88, down $3.89 for the day. October at $124.50, down $2.70 a barrel. August ethanol futures at $2.46, 3 cents higher. September down 4 cents at $2.44.06. Natural gas trading the September at $9.118, down 12¼. And the RBOB gasoline trading $3.06¼ down 6¢. Heating oil, diesel fuel, $3.44¢, down 7¢ in the August. Propane at $1.72 is 3 cents lower on the day. Gold futures are now trading the nearby August contract at $913.90 an ounce, up $11. The U.S. dollar at 73.24 is down 0.08 for the afternoon. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average stands at 11,486. That's just about 98 points lower for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the two-state region. A severe thunderstorm watch is in effect for northern and northeastern Illinois and northwestern Indiana. That until 7 p.m. this evening. This afternoon, our own meteorologist Daniel Pounder says the skies will be a mix of clouds and some sunshine. A few thunderstorms will arrive elsewhere to be partly to mostly sunny. Highs will range today between 85 and 90. Tonight, Mr. Pounder says, in the north, partly to mostly cloudy skies, a few scattered showers and thunderstorms. Elsewhere, partly cloudy. Lows will range from 62 in northeastern Indiana to around 70 in the west central parts of Illinois, and in the low 70s near Chicago. Tomorrow in the north, mostly cloudy, some scattered showers, and a few thunderstorms. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Time to take a look at the agricultural futures markets. On the line with us from Decatur, Illinois, and ADM Grain Group is Dan Swicker this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Let's talk just a bit about the marketplace. And tell me about the differentiation between soybeans and corn at this time, especially the FAR-deferred soybeans, which managed to put some gains in today.
Well, ever since it became official that USDA was not going to allow any early out of the CRP acres, we've seen some realignment and all the focus begins to shift to new crop prices and what each commodity is going to have to do to compete for acres based upon the projected expectations of demand, basically, that we look at for the 2009-10 marketing year. So soybeans, at least from what I understand, what may or may not be happening in South America, prices really aren't high enough to attract a big acreage increase out of Brazil. So the function of the market should be to try to encourage that as we go into the fall months. And of course, then soybeans are going to definitely be competing with corn and corn acres for next year, depending upon how big this year's crop is. Could be as high as 90 million is what the trade's talking about the most. And then that's going to maybe reduce soybean acres 2 to 3 million from where we're at. So then soybeans begin to get quite tight for the coming year. So the trade is beginning to, focus on 2009 prospects. I know the 2008 prospects, we still have a ways to go before we firm them up, both on acreage and yield. But the trade is at least at this point comfortable that we've got a pretty good crop out there. It's just a matter of fine-tuning it. To my understanding, why corn closed down so hard here today is there are some rumors that one of the private estimates that's going to be coming out here, I think, later this week, might come out tomorrow or early next week, may have a national average corn yield somewhere around 157, I think, is spooked the corn market here toward the close.
Would that be from Informa or someplace else?
Oh, I don't want to mention names. I think, process
right.
of elimination, you can do that.
Okay.
But this is what the rumor was, that one of your major companies that do estimate crop production was rumored to be maybe as high as 157. And if that is the case, I mean, you could see why corn closed down 15. Because that is a big change, I think, from what the trade is thinking. USDA is using 148. Trade, I think, has been kind of thinking maybe 152, 153. And if we see some private estimates in this 157, would be much larger than what the trade's been working.
I saw some photos of a corn plot. It was an AgriGold corn plot, actually. Scott Williamson, who we work with here at the station, the development folks who make the sales work with just a bit, had forwarded on to some of his salespeople and to, I think, to Dave and I both, some photos of Louisiana and corn. It's not too terribly far from harvest, but boy, it looked really good. Have you heard what the crop looks like in the Delta area and how that works into what's happening here in the middle part of the United States as well?
Well, I think for the most part, those are smaller acreages down there, and I think the corn probably should be good in those areas because they did get some good moisture in that southern coast here through the through June and July. Now, the beans are under the gun mostly right now in the Delta, which is kind of maybe the mid-Delta, the Mississippi, Boot Hill, Missouri, Arkansas. Those areas are under gun with some dry weather and some stress and not doing much growing. But when you get down to Louisiana, you're going to get a little further to the coast. And you had some pretty good yields, I think. That whole southern crop was pretty good, basically, from Texas on over through Louisiana, because they were able to, you know, get some good rains. They didn't get the excellent rains that they needed to probably have the bumper crop, but those are all pretty good yields from what I understand.
Well, if we were to, if the United States were to harvest 157 crop, that would have to mean that the Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, and even Minnesota crops must be tremendous. Have you talked to folks in Iowa? Have they recovered that much?
Well, they, you know, we got a long ways to go.
I
mean, everything looks real good. And everybody seems to be, you know, it all depends upon whether or not you were the one that got flooded out and whether or not you had to replant. But if you got your crop in pretty good, you're in good shape in Iowa and Minnesota. And I think the market probably had a tendency to overemphasize the acres that were being flooded out and whatnot during the month of June. But to our understanding, the crop looks awful good throughout the Corn Belt.
Well, let's dissect the 157 very quickly. Then if you do that off of harvested acres, because you throw out the acres in Iowa that were flooded that really aren't there anymore. So if we're doing that off of harvested acres, what does it really mean? A 157 average is awfully good, but it's probably on better acres maybe across the board than we've had in the past because the rougher ones all were drowned out.
Well, if we're in that neighborhood, it would be something like 12.4. And that means that our demand base could continue and could continue to grow because we're probably going to carry out 116 or about 1,600 here this current year. So, you know, you're going to have supplies at 1.4 billion bushels, 14.5 billion bushels. So you're going to have adequate supplies for the coming year. But what kicks in is that renewable fuels mandate, and demand is going to jump then for 2009-10 crop year, so you're going to have more acres.
All right. Well, thank you much. Any final word from you?
No, that's about it.
Okay. Well, thanks for dropping a 12.4 on us. We appreciate that a lot.
Okay.
All right, thank
Bye.
You. That's Dan Zwicker. He's with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Happens each and every Thursday afternoon. You are listening to the Closing Market Report. It's from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Dave Dickey's here now. He'll take us through a complete look at today's agricultural newscast.
In agricultural news, the U.S. House voted down a bill that would have tightened position limits on energy and agricultural futures contracts in a disagreement over offshore drilling and developing oil shale reserves. House leadership says the defeated bill would have prevented oil prices from being artificially inflated. Republicans say Congress must encourage domestic energy production and not just revise CFTC regulations. Earlier in the day, the White House Office of Management and Budget recommended the president veto the anti-speculation bill, saying it would hurt the competitiveness of the U.S. futures markets. The CFTC's Agricultural Advisory Committee is considering a number of options dealing with convergence. One option would significantly increase premium charges for grain storage. Another calls for a quicker compelled loadout, which would allow a warehouse certificate holder to force an elevator to deliver physical commodities in as little as 48 hours. CFTC Commissioner Michael Dunn says, quote, "The lack of convergence has shaken the confidence in the futures market to act as a price discovery mechanism." Four former U.S. trade representatives testifying yesterday at a Senate Finance Committee hearing urged Congress to approve free trade deals with Colombia, Panama, and South Korea. The deals have been held up by Democrat leadership, who say more needs to be done in those nations on human rights. In the wake of the collapse of the Doha Round, Brazil now says it plans on seeking retaliatory trade sanctions against U.S. cotton subsidies. Brazil trade officials say they do not see U.S. farm policy changing without imposing trade sanctions against U.S. products, including intellectual property rights. Brazil likely will also move forward with WTO litigation against a U.S. ethanol import tariff, which Brazil's Sugarcane Industry Association says is an obstacle to cane-based ethanol exports to the U.S. market. A filibuster against a bill extending renewable energy and energy efficiency tax credits will continue in the Senate. Yesterday, the measure failed to get the 60 votes needed to break the filibuster. The measure provides an 8-year extension of solar energy tax credits and a 1-year tax credit extension for biodiesel, renewable diesel, and wind power. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for WILL, Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. You can hear those programs anytime you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. In today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochka says country folks were recycling out of necessity even before recycling was considered cool.
People who don't have much money to waste are the ultimate recyclers, unwitting pioneers of green living. A lot of folks who grew up when mayonnaise only came in glass jars saw their moms, aunts, or grandmothers remove the labels and reuse the jars for canning vegetables. The mason lid fit, so why throw away a perfectly good jar? Some of these same folks would maybe get accused of being rednecks for having junk lying around, but they would be the first to fish out the part that would fix your car or your tractor right up, because that part isn't made anymore, and they've never thrown theirs away. Ever drink iced tea out of a jelly jar? It tastes just as good that way as it would in a crystal highball. When Dad's t-shirts were worn out, they weren't tossed into the trash. They were ripped into cleaning rags, good for a variety of jobs around the house. Mom's old stockings, perfect for tying up tomato plants in the garden. Large plastic ice cream containers that were great for storing bulk quantities of flour, sugar, cornmeal, and the like. Back when flour came in large, pretty cotton calico sacks, women used the material to make all kinds of things, from skirts to potholders to aprons to quilting squares. Reduce, reuse, recycle wasn't a slogan for country folks. It was a way of life. Farmers, out of necessity, know a thing or two about conserving resources. They buy in bulk to save trips in town. They may even team up to buy a large quantity of what they need and get a better price. That's how co-ops got started, after all. Farmers love shiny new tractors, but they'll make the old one run as long as they can. With fertilizer costing about 3 times as much as it did a couple of years ago, they work hard not to overapply it. Since the Great Depression, Americans in general have become more prosperous, more time-strapped, and more interested in convenience, and we've become a throwaway society. Now, through greater environmental awareness, we're starting to turn that around. Recycling is cool now. People who haven't had to reduce and reuse due to the penny-pinching imperative have gotten onto the bandwagon to help conserve our natural resources. The waste recycling rate has increased from 6.4% in 1960 to 32.5% in 2006, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. Since 2000, per capita waste generation has leveled off at 4.6 pounds of garbage per person per day. Today's focus on green living is great, but let's not forget that necessity is the mother of invention, and farmers and a lot of other country folks are recycling and were recycling before recycling was cool. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved to do so. Just share your views with us. Call us at 217-333-0850.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from the Archer Daniels Midland Company, ADM, resourceful by nature.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. Time to take a look at the agricultural cash grain markets. On the line with us today, Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Did you hear our discussion a bit earlier with Dan?
Yeah, I caught most of it in him.
Well, and have you heard about this 12-4 crop that might be lingering out there for corn at this point?
No, I'm not... We've got several privates coming out here in the next week, I know. From a reality standpoint, Todd, if somebody thinks they can take this crop within 3 or 4 bushel an acre at this point in time, I think they're kind of kidding themselves.
Well, I know that Dan was working with probably a rumor more than anything else
at
this point. So I don't want to say that belonged to ADM. Certainly did not.
Oh, no, I didn't mean that.
But it's kind of an interesting thought because we'd go from, an 800 million carryover suddenly to 1.4 or 1.5, something close to that, which is roughly speaking what we're at for the ending stocks for this year for corn.
Yeah, it kind of puts us in position about like we were when we came out of the August report last year. I believe we had a 157 or 158, and we were looking at about a 1.3 carryout, I believe. So similar situation to what we had last year.
Yeah, so I suppose the point is stocks would still be tight. There would still be a great deal of possibility on the upside potential for the marketplace.
Get us by another year, but then looking forward to how we're going to meet demand in 09, like Dan said.
Mm-hmm. What's your feeling about basis at this point?
Well, right now it's just been really quiet, not much going on. I think there is some corn movement as elevators see the crop getting a little bit bigger out here and thinking they may need a little more space maybe than they thought if they're in a situation where they've got carryover stocks. The big news, is, as Dan had mentioned earlier, too, is we've put some carry in this market. We've changed from an inverse from the 08 crop to the 09 to carry, and that allows the elevator to carry the corn if they're in a situation where they've got stalks and don't think they have the bushels to fill back up again this year.
And what are the bids in Lexington today?
We've got 537 on corn, 1379 on the beans.
Any final word, 10 seconds?
No, I can't really think of anything right now.
Okay, thanks much.
Okay.
That's Bill Mayer. He's with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. Joins us on a Thursday afternoon right here on the Closing Market Report. In 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Raspberry Cake Day. In medieval Europe, wild raspberries were considered medicinal. When settlers from Europe arrived in America, they found the natives already eating and drying berries. On this day in agricultural history in 1790, the first U.S. patent was granted to Samuel Hopkins of Vermont. The patent was for a process for producing potash and pearl ashes. Potash was used in soap and fertilizer. Pearl ashes were used in baking. It produced carbon dioxide gas and dough used in the first quickbreads. By the way, the patent was signed by President George Washington. In 1859, Theobald Smith was born, An American microbiologist, he linked Texas cattle fever with a parasite spread by blood-sucking ticks. In 1921, there were reports that it rained frogs in Sterling, Connecticut. And in 1923, Stephanie Kwolek was born. An American chemist, she created a new high-performance fiber, a liquid polymer that, after being spun, was five times stronger than steel with half the density of fiberglass. Kevlar today is used to make, among other things, rope, gloves, and building materials. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Lernard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason, your host, usually on a Thursday afternoon. Pete Levitt joins us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Pete is hopping the globe at this time in China, I believe, and he's pursuing some agricultural weather. I believe Pete is looking for... what is he looking for? Well, a weather phenomenon of some sort that he's hoping to track down. We'll talk with him, I believe, again next week. Here's what the forecast for the two-state region of Illinois and Indiana looks like from meteorologist Daniel Pounder. Tonight, he says, in the northern part of the two-state region, it'll be partly to mostly cloudy, a few scattered showers, a thunderstorm or two. Elsewhere, partly to mostly sunny, highs will range from 85 to 90. And there are lows will range from 62 in northeastern Indiana to 70 in the west central parts of Illinois, and lows in Chicago about 70. Tomorrow now, in the north, mostly cloudy, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. In central sections, a mix of clouds, sunshine, scattered showers, a few thunderstorms tomorrow as well. In the south, mostly sunny and hot. Highs across the two-state region for tomorrow from 84 in northeastern Indiana to 96 in the southern part of Illinois. And then the extended forecast is calling for hot and humid weather expected right on through the weekend and early next week, with high temps mostly in the 90s. The heat index will top out in the upper 90s and the low 100s in many areas for a few days. It's quite likely that heat wave won't last more than a few days, says Mr. Pounder, with more seasonable temperature readings and showers and thunderstorms returning around Wednesday or Thursday of next week. And then during the weekend and early next week, occasional showers and thunderstorms are possible. That on the edge of that hot air mass, including portions of northern Illinois and northern and eastern Indiana. One more look at this evening's forecast. It says in the north, partly to mostly cloudy, a few scattered showers and thunderstorms. Elsewhere, partly cloudy, lows will range tonight from 62 in northeastern Indiana to around 70 in west central Illinois and the low 70s near Chicago. You've been listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Please visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can listen to this program and other agricultural programming as an MP3 file or a podcast. It's all at willag.org. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for our weekend newsletter. It's absolutely free. Just hit subscribe on the right-hand side of the page. You have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.